We're now going to hear our reading, which is Daniel chapter 6.
Daniel in the pit of lions. Darius decided to appoint 120 governors to hold office throughout his empire. In addition, he chose Daniel and two others to supervise the governors and to look after the king's interests. Daniel soon showed that he could do better work than the other supervisors or the governors. Because he was so outstanding, the king considered putting him in charge of the whole empire. Then the other supervisors and the governors tried to find something wrong with the way Daniel administered the empire, but they couldn't, because Daniel was reliable and did not do anything wrong or dishonest. They said to one another, "We are not going to find anything of which to accuse Daniel unless it is something in connection with his religion." So they went to see the king and said, "King Darius, may your majesty live forever. All of us who administer your empire, the supervisors, the governors, the lieutenant governors, and the other officials, have agreed that your majesty should issue an order and enforce it strictly. Give orders that for 30 days no one be permitted to request anything from any god or from any human being except from your majesty. Anyone who violates this order is to be thrown into a pit filled with lions. So let your majesty issue this order and sign it, and it will be in force, a law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be changed." And so King Darius signed the order. When Daniel learnt that the order had been signed, he went home. In an upstairs room of his house, there were windows that faced towards Jerusalem. There, just as he had always done, he knelt down at the open windows and prayed to God three times a day. When Daniel's enemies observed him praying to God, all of them went together to the king to accuse Daniel. They said, "Your Majesty, you signed an order that for the next 30 days, anyone who requested anything from any god or from any human being except you would be thrown into a pit filled with lions." The king replied, "Yes, a strict order, a law of the Medes and Persians which cannot be changed." And they said to the king, "Daniel, one of the exiles from Judah, does not respect your majesty or obey the order you issued. He prays regularly three times a day." When the king heard this, he was upset and did his best to find some way to rescue Daniel. He kept trying until sunset. Then Daniel's enemies came back to the king and said to him, "Your majesty knows that according to the laws of the Medes and Persians, no order which the king issues can be changed." So the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested, and he was thrown into the pit filled with lions. He said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve so loyally, rescue you." A stone was put over the mouth of the pit, and the king placed his own royal seal and the seal of his nobleman on the stone so that no one could rescue Daniel. Then the king returned to the palace and spent a restless night without food or any form of entertainment. At dawn, the king got up and hurried to the pit. When he got there, he called out anxiously, "Daniel, son of the living God, was the God you serve so loyally able to save you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May your majesty live forever. God sent his angel to shut the mouths of the lions so that they would not hurt me. He did this because he knew that I was innocent and because I have not wronged you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders for Daniel to be pulled up out of the pit. So they pulled him up and saw that he had not been hurt at all, for he trusted God. Then the king gave orders to arrest all the men who had accused Daniel, and they were thrown, together with their wives and their children, into the pit filled with lions. Before they even reached the bottom of the pit, the lions pounced on them and broke all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to the people of all nations, races, and languages on earth, "Greetings. I command that throughout my empire, everyone should fear and respect Daniel's God. He is a living God, and he will rule forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his power will never come to an end. He saves and rescues. He performs wonders and miracles in heaven and on earth. He saved Daniel from being killed by the lions." Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian.
So I guess that Daniel 6 must be one, if not the best known chapter within the Bible. I remember hearing about it at Sunday school probably 50 years ago now. But one of the things that is not apparent from a simple reading of that chapter is the time span over which the events in Daniel take place. When he's first taken to Babylon as a captive, Daniel is a teenager, somewhere between 14 and 17 years old. When he's thrown into the lion's den, the calculations are relatively simple. He is actually in his 80s. Another thing about Daniel and his times is that I think that in many ways they are very similar to our times. You probably think at first, oh, that's a very peculiar version of the 21st century and I don't recognize it. Well, yes, we've come a long way technologically, certainly. We have what might generously be described as a democratic system of government. Certainly we have the chance to vote. We don't have that rule by authoritarian kings, although if you look at the power of President Trump recently to dismiss anyone he doesn't like, perhaps we might occasionally wonder. But in more essential ways, perhaps we do live in a society that is very similar to Daniel's. Society nowadays is certainly very much dominated by secular concerns, isn't it? Material prosperity seems to be the thing that most people live for. And that was certainly true of Babylonian society. We also have reached a point where we have a sort of tolerant liberalism dominant in our society. It means that we have to not only respect other religions and other ways of doing things, but we also have to be very careful how we might criticize them. Society seems to tolerate both the amoral and the immoral. And it's a very peculiar state of affairs, really, because it's only by criticizing the status quo that society can ever change. So some of the very changes that people would say have been good for our society have come about simply because criticism was possible in the past, but now it perhaps is a bit more difficult. Do people who take that attitude truly think that we have reached some kind of ideal society which no longer needs to change? And then, of course, our own society restricts what we can do, just as the society in Babylonian times restricted what they could do. We think we have choice, and we do to some extent, but we still, most of us, I assume, here have had to work for a living or are still working for a living. We have to work, most of us, in secular employment, and that brings its own issues to bear. And in the midst of Babylonian society, Daniel was faithful to God throughout his life, whatever the circumstances. We don't have any great details exactly what situations he had to face, apart from the highlighted ones in these first six chapters of Daniel. But he lived in that society subject to the limitations that were placed on him. And he certainly sought the good of other people. If we look back to chapter 1, he sought the good of his fellow captives in Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sought and served both King Nebuchadnezzar and Darius the Mede, who we read about just now. And as far as conscience allowed him to, he sought the good of the society in which he lived. He occupied a high position for most of his life. And in some ways, the challenges that Daniel faced are exactly the same challenges that we face today as well. But first, let's go through the story as we read it. We can divide it into four parts, really. If we look first at just the first five chapters, we see that the real issue is honesty in the face of corruption. There was a reason for appointment of all these governors and supervisors, or satraps and administrators, as one version calls them. And they were there so that the king would not suffer loss. Presumably that means so that his taxes and would be collected, so that his commands would be carried out. And Daniel had so distinguished himself in that society, in the work that he did, that Darius wanted to appoint him as the one in overall charge. He wanted to appoint him, if you like the prime minister, a decision that Emmanuel Macron now faces in France. And there were many reasons why the other two administrators and all the underlings, all the supervisors, would not have been very happy about that situation. Daniel was older. Perhaps they thought he should have been retired. He was also Jewish, and they would have thought that might have been inappropriate for him to be in charge. It should have been one of the conquering people of the Medes and Persians. It might also have been because some of them were either on the fiddle or they were just lazy. And if that was so, Daniel would surely have pointed that out and done something about it. So his hard work and his honesty threatened their positions. And people who want riches, who want an easy life, are quite often ruthless. And so the plotting begins. So we move to verses 6 to 11. And here we see that whilst Daniel's fellows are scheming to get him into trouble, get him dismissed or worse, Daniel simply carries on believing. That all that begins verse 7 must be a lie. All of us who administer your empire. Well, there were 123 of them in all, including Daniel. Daniel certainly wasn't one of them, and I can't imagine the king receiving 122 people into his chambers. No doubt it was an elite group, and they had gone, and they might have had words with some of the others, but I doubt very much that all of them were even consulted. And they give Darius a lot of good reasons, perhaps, for persuading him to sign this decree. They might have said, well, it'll be a uniting factor. It will establish your authority. And the subtle thing was that, in effect, he was to be, for those 30 days, the only one people could go to. He was to be like a god. He was to be godlike. And that must have been very flattering to Darius. You would have thought, really, that he would have spoken to Daniel first. And we don't know why he didn't. Perhaps his vanity overtook him. Conceivably, God actually wanted things to go ahead as they did, simply to deal with these people who were plotting once and for all. But whatever the reason, Darius doesn't take Daniel's advice or look into the thing more closely, and he signs this decree. And how does Daniel react? He doesn't scheme, he doesn't panic, he just carries on believing. And he decides to continue with his discipline of prayer despite the inevitable consequences. He feared God rather than man, and he trusted God completely. And really, he could have dissembled, if you like, from his position. After all, it wasn't absolutely necessary for him to have the door open, for him to have the windows open. He could have prayed in secret and thought, well, that's the pragmatic thing to do. But clearly he felt there was some stand that he needed to take in this particular instance. And then we come to verses 12 to 23. And this is really a question of man's authority up against God's power. This trap is duly sprung. These other people see Daniel praying to God, and they go to Darius and they say, look, he's done this. There's this law. The king is very concerned for Daniel. He realizes that some kind of trap has been sprung here. He tries to find loopholes. He tries to find a way of saving Daniel, because I think he views Daniel as a friend, and he certainly views him as somebody very useful in his administration. But then we see that eventually the plotters come back to him. Verse 15. Then Daniel's enemies came back to the king. They remind the king that what has been decreed cannot be undecreed. It's an unchangeable law, for whatever reason that they had that sort of system in place. And he really has very little choice at the end of it. And so Daniel is cast into the lion's den. Darius spends that sleepless night. He is worried. His final words to Daniel show that he actually does have perhaps some faith that Daniel's God will save him. But he clearly can't have been completely certain. And perhaps, if we think about our own experience, we might pray very hard for something. We know that God can do it. We think that he will do it. But usually there's some kind of, have I got this right? There's some kind of doubt in our minds. And it's hardly surprising that Darius is not completely confident of the outcome. But as soon as he can, presumably at some pre-decreed time in the morning, he rushes down to the lion's den. He calls out to Daniel through a hole at the top of the den, which was kept open, would you believe it, for spectators. He's overjoyed at hearing Daniel's voice. And Daniel reveals that God sent an angel to stop the lions from attacking him, and probably also to provide company for him for a long night. After all, the lions probably weren't great conversationalists. And Daniel comes out of this lion's den without a mark on him. And there are quite a lot of similarities between chapter 6 and chapter 3 in this. In chapter 3, if you remember, Daniel's three friends are thrown into the fiery furnace, and they come out, not even smelling of fire. And then finally we come to those last few verses, 24 to 28, and we see that Darius is not slow to bring retribution and punishment against the plotters. He knows that they were simply out to get Daniel. And when these people are thrown into the lion's den, we see very clearly the lions weren't tame, they weren't drugged, and they were hungry. And then Darius makes what is effectively a public witness before the nation about God. He wrote to the people of all nations, races, and languages. Everyone should fear and respect Daniel's God. He is a living God. It's interesting that he brings that out, isn't he? He's a living God, because the Babylonian society would have been one full of idols. And here Darius recognizes that he has come across the living God. I think there are two lessons really for us, and these are both simple and difficult. The first thing is that Daniel, throughout his entire life in Babylon, sought the good of the society in which he lived, in as far as he was able to. When he first arrived in Babylon, he was given the equivalent of a university education. He learned Babylonian laws, he learned their customs, he learned their culture. It was a steep learning curve for him. And probably, in a way, he wanted to do none of those things. He might have thought there was little value in much of it. And yet, he needed to live in Babylonian society. That was where God had placed him. And so he cooperated in that process. In fact, so much so, you may recall, that he excelled immediately. He and his three friends were said to be 10 times better than anyone else who came through that process. And in fact, Daniel didn't just cooperate, he was involved. He could surely have avoided these high official positions that he occupied in many ways. He could have deliberately got some questions wrong on the exams. He could have, in later life, pleaded that he'd already done his bit. Certainly by the time of Darius, he could have said, surely it's time that I was retired. Here's somebody else who can do the job better than I. But that would actually have been a lie. And however he put it, it would have been somewhat dishonest. He knew his own ability, he knew his own calling, he accepted the challenges that such positions of authority would inevitably bring for him. He was clearly scrupulously honest and hard-working, and even in his 80s, he was serving this man, Darius the Mede, working so well that by the judgment of his work, he was to be put in charge. And a significant part of that factor would have been his honesty. He wasn't just a great civil servant, he was a real friend to Darius, just as he had been to Nebuchadnezzar earlier. And we ourselves are called to be the same in the place where we live and with the people that live alongside us. In many ways, the position in which we find ourselves this morning may not be our first choice. We may not like certain aspects of our society. In fact, I'm sure that is true for all of us. But we are bound by its laws where they don't contradict God's laws. We shouldn't chafe about the realities of having to work for a living or the administrative necessities of modern life. Though, of course, there's nothing to stop us campaigning for change. Much of today's social provision and awareness, you will recall, comes from Christians looking at society and seeing how it can be improved, seeing what the needs were, seeing what God might actually want to do around them. And so we do have hospitals and orphanages, which, if we trace them back, are a result of Christian witness. We are called to be witnesses to others, and we cannot be effective witnesses if we lock ourselves away from the world. Some of our activities may give us the opportunity to be a witness in word, but all of our activities give us the chance to be witnesses in the things that we do and the way that we do them. Essentially, that is how Daniel witnessed to rulers such as Nebuchadnezzar, Darius, and Cyrus over a period of about 70 years. And we need to take the opportunities that are around us to do the same. But secondly, and it's really a corollary, if you like, to the first thing, Daniel was faithful to God. In chapter 6, he was faithful near the end of his life in the face of that threat of being thrown to the lions. As I said earlier, he could no doubt have compromised, found some way of still praying to God, but not being seen to do so, so that he could have avoided for just 30 days. But he chose not to do so. And perhaps his enemies would just have devised another way of plotting against him. Perhaps it was God's will that this came to a head at this time. And Daniel had shown his desire to be obedient to God from the moment that he set his foot in Babylon, when he was faced with that challenge of taking the food from the king's table. It may have been something to do with the Levitical food laws, but I somehow doubt it. It's probably the fact that food had been offered to idols, and in some way Daniel wanted to stand up for what he believed in. His friend showed a similar faith facing the fiery furnace. And Daniel was faithful in what he had to do, which wasn't always easy. Remember, three times he interpreted dreams. He interpreted for Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, which was that vision he had of the statue, and that was relatively easy to do. It wasn't saying anything that was a problem for Nebuchadnezzar particularly. In chapter 4, it was a bit different because that dream in chapter 4 was a threat against Nebuchadnezzar. It was telling Nebuchadnezzar that he was going the wrong way, but Daniel was faithful to interpret that. And then even more so in chapter 5, he interpreted the writing on the wall, which was telling the end of the Babylonian Empire. Daniel was, despite any consequences that would follow, always faithful in his interpretations and his obedience to God. He was nearly always tactful as well. He was certainly always faithful. And so we're called to be exactly the same. We're called to be faithful in service to God in all aspects of our life, inside and outside of the Christian community. And there are plenty of challenges to our faith out there, just as there were for Daniel. How do we deal with them? In the same way as Daniel did, using the natural abilities that God has given us, by being in constant contact with God. Daniel had a busy and important job, didn't he? But he still found time 3 times a day to go to his room and to pray to God. He would have been under great pressure. His life was in danger. But he was still always direct, always tactful, always honest. And his life of disciplined prayer meant that he could be used by God in these most challenging circumstances. And that's what we need to emulate as well. We need to have that kind of contact with God so that we can be faithful to him in the same way. And perhaps if we feel we don't have enough time to pray, we need to review our priorities. Now, some of us, myself included, may find it quite difficult to identify with the Apostle Paul sometimes. He has a roving missionary zeal. He has complicated theology. He has very, very long sentences. It's perhaps easier to relate to Daniel's life, but it's still an immense challenge. The challenges that he faced really are there for us today. And particularly for those of us who are not in full-time Christian service, who don't feel ourselves drawn towards that, it's Daniel that provides a real example for us as to how we live our lives. So in summary, we are called to live lives that are faithful to God, to cooperate and work with the society around us as far as conscience allows us to, and God's reveal will allows us to. We are challenged to be involved in what is going on. And we should develop that disciplined prayer life that Daniel did in order to support and help us in that process. In the words of Micah 6, verse 8, Daniel acted justly, loved mercy, and walked humbly with his God. Are we doing the same this morning?